Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Russian President Vladimir Putin is shoring up new alliances.
I think he knows he's lost ground in East-West relations, probably permanently, and he's doing what China has been doing for the last decade or so, which is trying to create new North-South lines of power and economic and diplomatic cooperation.
And extreme heat causes wildfires across Europe. Plus, why investors are betting on hydrogen projects. It's Monday, July 18th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has removed the country's general prosecutor and head of the security service amid allegations that employees in their offices were collaborating with Russia. Neither of the two officials could be reached for comment. Wall Street Journal national security reporter Brett Forrest explains Zelensky's aims.
It means that President Zelensky and the presidential administration are getting very serious about the idea of Russian infiltration in government and in the security services. What Zelensky is addressing is the idea that there are people within the government who have been undermining the war against Russia. So the effort here is to identify and root out these people, thereby strengthening Ukraine's chances.
Europe is on tenterhooks over whether Canada's decision to bend its own sanctions, allowing turbines that power the Nord Stream pipeline to be repaired and returned to Russia, is enough to get Russia to restore the flow of natural gas to Europe. Nord Stream, the main artery for Russian gas to Europe, is shut through July 21st for routine maintenance. But European governments fear Moscow won't reopen the pipeline afterwards. After holding talks with Germany, Canada is giving a 2-year exemption to its sanctions, allowing 6 turbines from Siemens powering Nord Stream to be serviced in Montreal, according to a Canadian government spokesman. Siemens is racing to return a turbine already in Montreal for repairs back to Russia. Across Europe, countries are battling record-breaking heat. Temperatures exceeded 115 degrees Fahrenheit in some parts of Spain over the weekend. Wildfires have broken out in Spain and France, where fires have burned nearly 30,000 acres of forest and forced thousands of people to evacuate. High temperatures are reaching as far north as London this week. In Texas, a review by state lawmakers of the Uvalde Elementary School shooting found widespread failures. While hundreds of law enforcement officials rushed to the scene, the preliminary report found that a lack of leadership and communication resulted in a delayed confrontation with the shooter that may have cost lives. 19 fourth graders and 2 teachers were killed in the mass shooting. And plane maker Boeing says that after nearly 2 years, it's very close to resuming deliveries of its 787 Dreamliner. The model has been beset by delays beginning with manufacturing issues in 2020 that led to more questions from its own engineers and federal regulators. Boeing Commercial Airplanes Chief Stan Deal says the federal approval process is now nearly complete. People familiar with the matter say the Federal Aviation Administration isn't expected to approve deliveries of the planes until later this month at the earliest. Hydrogen is becoming a hot commodity. We report exclusively that big-name investors are investing billions of dollars into new clean hydrogen projects aimed at easing the climate crisis. Joining me now with more on this is Wall Street Journal markets reporter Amrit Ramkumar. Hi, Amrit. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So to start, tell us what big investors are seeing right now and the potential of this technology. Why are they pouring money into hydrogen projects?
The biggest reason is that they have to meet the world's climate goals. So for hard-to-abate industries where electricity and batteries aren't enough to get the job done, like shipping and trucking, commodity production, making ammonia for fertilizers, people think hydrogen has to be the solution, really. It has to be produced at a meaningful scale. So companies that can do that are really finding, like you said, a lot of interest from big-name investors. The one we recently wrote about, and we broke the news that they raised more than $300 million, they say they have a unique way to cheaply turn natural gas using clean electricity into hydrogen and carbon black, which is a material that goes into rubber tires and all sorts of everyday products. So a lot of other companies are trying to make completely green hydrogen by splitting water into hydrogen and oxygen. That process is just expensive. But even for that, people are really excited and they expect the cost to come down as the technology improves. So it's definitely one of the hottest investment areas right now, despite all this market turmoil around us.
How risky of an investment is this?
It depends what you're talking about. There's definitely still a lot of technological and cost risk when you look at the hydrogen space. A lot of these startups that are using these new technologies and approaches, they still have to scale a lot and bring down their costs, and they're competing against some of the biggest energy companies. And so all these startups have to show that they can meet the demand, scale, and have this path to bring down costs. But on the flip side, as is the case with a lot of climate stuff, there's pretty much no other way, people say, for some of these hard-to-abate industries, again, to decarbonize. So that leaves you with big companies, big investors pumping money in. And eventually, and already, governments are also pumping money in and proposing regulations to make this industry take off. And the company we wrote about, Monolith in Nebraska, that uses that natural gas process, they have a $1 billion loan from the U.S. Department of Energy that's been approved if they meet certain conditions. So you have investors coming in, but you also have the government really pumping significant amounts of dollars into these markets.
That's Wall Street Journal markets reporter Amrit Ramkumar. Amrit, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, Russia is working on a new North-South alliance to counter the West, why Moscow is shifting, and what's at stake after the break.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Russia's war in Ukraine has heavily damaged its relationships with the Western countries. But Russian President Vladimir Putin seems to be leaving behind the traditional East-West relations, betting on building a new diplomatic, economic, and security network along a North-South axis in an alliance with China. Joining me now with more on this is Jerry Saib, The Wall Street Journal's former Capital Journal columnist and Washington executive editor. Hi, Jerry. Good to have you back.
Hi. Thanks. Glad to be on.
So, Jerry, let's start with Russia's strategy here. Why is it shifting, and what are the aims of the new strategy?
This is one of those cases where I think you have to take Vladimir Putin at his word. You know, often he just tells you exactly what he's doing and in so many words. And he said a couple of weeks ago, look, there are new power centers being built around the world. These are revolutionary changes in the system of international relations. They're fundamental. I understand them and the West doesn't. And that's really what he's trying to do here. I think he knows he's lost ground in East-West relations, probably permanently. And he's doing what China has been doing for the last decade or so, which is trying to create new North-South lines of power and economic and diplomatic cooperation. And he's having some success in that effort. Not guaranteed long-term success here, but it's certainly his strategy at the moment.
So tell us about whether there is space for Russia to develop this North-South axis. How are overtures from Russia and China being received by other countries?
Well, what you're seeing is that a lot of countries have simply chosen to abstain from joining the anti-Russia coalition that the U.S. and the NATO allies have put together. And the U.S. and the NATO allies and their friends in, say, Australia and South Korea have been very good at staying cohesive in the face of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But what Vladimir Putin is doing is simply going around that Western cohesion and looking for friendship in other places. In India, for example, which is a great example, India has decided that it's going to remain non-aligned here. It depends on Russia for military equipment. It is now buying lots of Russian energy, Russian oil at below market prices. So that's a good deal for India. It is simply chosen to stay on the sidelines. And so have some countries in Latin America. South Africa has done the same. Brazil, to some extent, even Mexico, Egypt, Singapore, some countries in the Middle East. They simply decided to stay on the side, to maintain good relations with Russia, and to stay out of the fight over Ukraine. Sometimes these are for very parochial reasons. They need Russian grain. They need Russian military equipment. They want Russian oil if it's not going to be sold to the West. And sometimes it's simply because they don't want to get involved in an East-West fight. In any case, there's ground there for Vladimir Putin to roam, and he is doing reasonably well in roaming that ground.
Considering historical tensions between Russia and China, how strong can their alliance be right now?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, there are definitely limits to this Russian strategy. One of the limits is that Russia and China traditionally have a tense relationship, sometimes an antagonistic relationship, sometimes even a hostile relationship. They don't entirely trust each other. You know, Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping, the leader of China, in February, just before the Ukraine invasion, signed what they called a pact of eternal friendship. But I think you can take that with a certain grain of salt. It means they're friends and to some extent allies for now, but they have differences. Russia, for example, wants to build a relationship with India and provides military equipment to India. India, at the same time, has a very tense border relationship and sometimes open hostilities with China. And I think, and this is really important to remember, I think China has a bigger interest in the overall international economic situation. Russia doesn't have that same interest. So there are definitely differences between Russia and China. We should be aware of those. And to some extent, the U.S., in trying to counter this Russian initiative, probably ought to be trying to exacerbate those differences between Russia and China a little bit.
Right. Let's talk about that a little bit more. What will this mean for the U.S. and the West? And what are some steps they may take to counter the efforts of Russia and China?
Well, one step to take for sure is to talk with the Chinese and remind them of the places where American and Chinese interests overlap, where they're not at odds. I think beyond that, one of the things the U.S. has to do is kind of revive some of these non-military instruments of power that probably have atrophied in the last few years. You know, we haven't paid as much attention to foreign aid. We haven't paid as much attention to relations in Latin America, for example, haven't paid as much attention to relationships in Africa. China has been moving in and playing in all those games, and now the Russians are doing the same. And I think one of the things the U.S. has to do is revive its own interests in these regions and its own use of non-military sources of power. That includes foreign aid, but sometimes it includes just paying attention. Now, I have to say the Biden administration is doing some things now to try to make up ground. The U.S. recently hosted a Summit of the Americas meeting in Los Angeles. President Biden, for example, has just finished a trip to Saudi Arabia, an attempt to make sure that Saudi oil is on the market in large quantities to make up for lost Russian oil and to make sure the U.S.-Saudi friendship remains intact in the face of overtures from Russia. Finally, I think that the U.S. just needs to remind itself that it actually has friends. China and Russia are not that good at building friendships. They're very good at creating joint interests, at buying friends, but they're not very good at building friendships. And the U.S. still is. And that's an intangible asset the U.S. has that it should take advantage of at a time like this.
That's Jerry Seib, The Wall Street Journal's former Capital Journal columnist and Washington executive editor. Jerry, thank you so much for joining me.
Happy to be with you.
And finally, companies are struggling to bring workers back to the office, just as the mercury is rising in many areas across the U.S. and Europe. As we've reported, there have been some challenges luring employees back. But where free food hasn't worked, free air conditioning might. Wall Street Journal careers reporter Ray Smith explains.
This is one of the things that people liked about working from home. If you had air conditioning at home, you didn't have to worry about commuting and being a sweaty mess while you try to get to the office. And now that more people are returning to the offices, it's hitting them in the face. One of the things they hated about going into the office is the commute, is how hot it is when it's this time of year. And so workers are confronting, and in some cases, the opposite is true, where people who worked from home who didn't have air conditioning are preferring to go into the office because there's air conditioning there.
And that's what's news for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Zscaler extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines trained by 500 trillion daily signals to prevent ransomware and AI attacks that target business. Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI. Learn more at zscaler.com/zerotrustAI.